Thanks for listening to the Drummer's Weekly Groovecast. You can contact the show at twitter.com/DW Groovecast and through Facebook at facebook.com/Drummer's Weekly Groovecast.
Good evening.
I am warning you right now, if you touch my drums, I will stab you in the neck with a knife.
Ain't a fucking. Ain't a fucking.
Mom!
Take it easy. Lower it.
I'm not going to lower it. I have to do this now.
I don't mind you playing it, but lower it.
Are we going to straighten out?
No, we had a problem. I mean, we tried to do everything we could.
What do you mean?
Well, you know what I mean.
Next!
A little trouble there. You're rushing.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Yeah!
Good morning, sunshine. How are you?
Enjoying a day where I don't feel I have to build a boat.
Well said.
Not really, but it's true.
Well, I mean, down here these days, you might need a helicopter.
Or a tunnel to go in, or, like, you know, safe space.
Ground transportation is dicey these days in
That's
the Atlanta
true.
Area.
Yeah. A crackhead burned down the bridge, which I'm not altogether convinced is true.
Well, if you want to throw a little fuel on the fire,
I got it. Ba-doom-tsh.
Yeah. Did you see the latest conspiracy that in a what would be unrelated story that there was an attorney that was gunned down in Midtown Atlanta last week, or it might have been early this week? Now the conspiracy says that the person that gunned her down was in some kind of cahoots, because said attorney that was gunned down immediately requested the papers regarding that fire on the bridge, because she was some kind of an attorney that had a lot of architectural and, like, building experience, something like that. She was going to go into the debunking mode.
Wow. Like little New York over here.
Man, I'm telling you, I've already had a few listeners say that we need to build our audience by going into either the conspiracy theory business or possibly even the paranormal business.
Okay. Bring back the ghost of Buddy Rich and humble ourselves. Is that what we'll be doing?
Well, either that or doing a Squatch cast.
Oh, I like it.
You like that one? That was the one that was the big suggestion from a friend of mine. We need to have a Sasquatch podcast and call it the Squatch Cast.
You know, if we were to go search for him, I'm pretty sure traffic wouldn't be much of an issue.
Do you mean traffic to the podcast or traffic getting to the...
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, well, I thought of a gig that I'm gonna go after, and I might do something along the lines of the person who took care of this attorney. But
yeah,
you ever watch Indians games? They got that guy back there banging on that big bass drum.
Oh, yeah.
I could do that.
You like that gig?
He's not reading charts, is he?
Well, if it is, it's basically accented eighth notes. Bum, 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 bum. You got that, man, all day long.
I could do that with my left hand.
You got that all day long. By the way, while we're talking about the Boys of Summer, first off, couple of non sequiturs. Big Sexy pitched like a beast last night for the Braves. And it's very encouraging because we're roughly the same age. So, you know, I'm thinking about trying out. And then secondly is this, we get back, as I swerve deftly back on track. You know, the Braves have a big old drum themselves. I wonder if it made it over to the new park. You know what I'm talking about, man? They've got that huge drum, man.
Yep.
And Remo did supply the heads, by the way. They made it a point, man, to put a big old massive logo on that.
Really?
Yeah, they sure did.
They never do that.
Nah, you know. It's endorser stock is what they told me.
I hope that doesn't create a trend, like, on bass drum heads and cymbals.
Yeah.
That would be awful. Imagine having, like, big logos on your cymbals. You're like, basically giving them free advertising or something?
You know, though, man, that doesn't bother me a bit, because as soon as that symbol comes in, man, I just take a wire brush and some Comet and scrape that sucker right off.
Woo! You are a dirty, low-down...
Makes that thing sound
non-opportunist.
You know, I mean, it makes it sound good. Take that, after that, and just dig a hole in the ground, bury it in there for a couple months. You know, all that stuff works well.
And I'm so lazy. I'll just buy my $2,500 K.
Yeah. Have the work already done for you.
Yep.
Well done.
Well, I don't know, man. Probably, it makes it sound like Tony Williams if you put it in the ground, right?
That's what I've always heard, man. That's why I'm driving the Tony Williams yellow Gretsch car these days.
Oh, I forgot.
Remember? Yep. Makes me drive better.
Okay, whatever you think, man.
John, we told the good folks last week that we were going to give them a firm date on our first ever giveaway, and we're not going to disappoint. We're going to tell them. So, folks, put it on your calendar. It's going to be Tuesday, April 18th, otherwise known as Tax Day here in the U.S. Yeah. So,
the bane of self-employed musicians' existence.
Well, we thought we would throw in a modicum of goodness on a day that's normally known for badness.
That's pretty good. I like it. We're going to brighten someone's...
Yeah.
Some poor, destitute musician's day, I hope.
Hopefully, yeah. We're gonna let everybody know also in the few days leading up to it, roughly, you know, the exact time of day that we're going to do it. And we are going to go Facebook Live. We're going to do our first live broadcast.
Woo!
Yeah.
I'm going to wear a Ronald Reagan mask.
Is there some semblance or some significance to that regarding tax day?
I don't know.
I kind of like that, though, man. I mean, it's
I'm not even really like some big Ronald Reagan fan. I think I just saw it in a movie where some guy like robbed a bank or something with them on.
Wasn't a movie, man. You were harkening back to your days of Genesis in the Land of Confusion video.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
That's exactly what, man, you are an MTV baby. I love it.
Dude, I more importantly, John, I am on it today. I am out from and under the fog of allergy season, even though it's still raging here. I think I've just built up enough tolerance to it and immunity to it that I'm at least powering through with somewhat of an unfoggy mind this morning.
You have to. You sounded like you were on another planet last week, so we're happy.
Like I said, I was channeling my lozenge-based Jerry Lewis influences on the show.
Funny.
So, but anyway, yeah. So Tuesday, April 18th, we're going to do the drawing for our 10-inch Peisty 20 Series Splash and our Gretsch Drums T-shirt. So
probably late morning.
Yeah, we'll say late morning. We'll end up narrowing it down. We'll get it down to within an hour's amount of time within the next couple of weeks, or getting closer to the actual drawing date. And, you know, just stay in touch with our Twitter account and Facebook account, and you'll be well apprised of when it's going to happen. And again, to get entered into this contest, all you have to do is swing by our iTunes page. The Drummer's Weekly Groovecast page on iTunes. Leave us a short written review. The important words there are written review, not just clicking the stars. The stars are great, but you got to be written. That way we can get your iTunes handle, your iTunes name, and that's the name that we will use in the drawing to identify who the winner is. So that's all you got to do. And anybody who is entered all the way up until the time of the contest, you are eligible. That means people who have entered well prior before this contest ever existed, you are entered to win. The only caveat that we like to say is no entrants from outside of the continental U.S. will be eligible. Customs are a bitch, as they say, John. We don't want to have to deal with that. It's paperwork, man. The man's holding us down.
Is customs like a code for the high cost of shipping?
Well, that too. But you know how it is, man. I've shipped things to even Canada, man. It's a pain in the butt.
Man, I shipped a snare drum to Ohio the other day, and it was like $30. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I got to get out of my antiquated 15-year-old shipping price brain and quit losing money.
It is devastatingly expensive. Man, the West Coast in particular from here is tough.
Brutal.
Sending stuff to L.A. or getting stuff from L.A., man, is bad news.
No, the best way to do that is get your quote from like Atlanta to Seattle and say, this is what it costs. If it's less, I'll give you money back. There's your selling advice for the day.
Man, this is a whole podcast into itself.
Sorry.
I'm telling you, we could go on. This one's going to be a long one anyway today. We've been challenged by the listeners to do a four-hour show, so that's what today is going to be. Four-hour show.
No.
Well, anyway.
I refuse. I'll be walking out, setting my timer right now.
You're so inflexible, man.
I know. That's kind of apropos for today's topic, too, especially regarding me.
Yeah. Well, just to button up the contest, yeah, just get on iTunes, leave us a short written review. You will be automatically entered. We will let everyone know the exact time on the 18th of April that we'll be doing the drawing. Perfect segue into saying you can stay in touch with us at our Twitter account, twitter.com/WDW Groovecast, facebook.com/DrummersWeeklyGroovecast, and always email us at our Gmail account, drummersweeklygroovecast@gmail.com. Now, John, we received also a question that is very appropriate and kind of just dovetails into our topic for the week. It's another one of these really kind of a broad questions that we could probably, again, do just an entire show about on it, but let's give the bullet points on the question, which is, guys, do you have any tips on playing with a conductor? Well, yes, we do.
Tell them you're busy that day.
On to the topic for the day. Yeah. No, but seriously, yeah, we do have a few quick tips. Now, like I said, we could go on infinitum on this, okay? But let me go ahead and just start out by saying there are several conductors that you could potentially play with. Probably the most common ones are going to be an orchestral style conductor that has a rhythm section with you being the drummer in it. And you can use that as far as like thinking in terms of like maybe like a orchestral pops concert. You can also think of it in terms as possibly like some kind of a large church gig that has, you know, it's kind of a mixed setting where you've got orchestral strings, woodwinds, brass, and then a rhythm section in the middle. And then the other kind of situation I think that's fairly common is where you would have, like, say, a theater-style show where you're doing a Broadway-style musical or something where you've got a conductor as well. And that's a little bit of a different animal. Well, I've done all those. And the biggest things I would tell you is this. One, if at all possible, get as much of the music and or recordings that you can get your hands on and learn. In other words, the less you can have your eyes on the music and more on the conductor, the better off and the more comfortable it's going to be for everyone. On top of that, you should get familiar with the tempos. Because if you run into one of these conductors that doesn't like to give a count off, dislikes to give a downbeat, you can be in much better, you know, much better state of mind and much closer in tempo that as well.
Demon.
Yeah, it happens though, man. Ugh. It happens. And the next thing is this, is on the rehearsals, every conductor will have tendencies, right? They'll have tendencies to rush here, tendencies to drag here, tendencies to want to follow strings. Like when the rhythm section drops out, they'll have tendencies to want to slow down and follow strings at certain sections. And so
they're like piano players.
You said it.
Wait, sorry.
But learn the tendencies. Learn the tendencies of these conductors. And then ultimately, the best success that I've had with conductors of any kind, whether I'm playing in Pop's concert, a church setting, or a Broadway bus and truck thing, is most conductor-drummer relationships are successful when there is a good amount of mutual trust and respect. And you get respect from them by learning the music ahead of time and then doing some give and take with the tempos. You need to have a, I like to say, a malleable sense of tempo on this. Now, this doesn't mean that you just completely and totally fall apart, you know, and just, you know, bend to every whim of a conductor. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't. But if, again, you find these tendencies of this guy wants to fall back a little bit here, he wants to push the tempo a little bit here, try to figure out graceful ways to where these tempo adjustments are not so jarring and jerky. In other words, try to make these tempo transitions a little bit more gradual and a little bit more musical. And there you go.
Nice.
John, you know what I had
tendency they have.
What is that?
Replace rock and roll drummers.
What?
Yeah, that's what they're thinking the entire show. This guy hasn't looked at me once. He's just playing like almost perfect time, and it's annoying.
So, as a friend of mine, a bass player, used to say, those conductors sometimes get nervous when it starts to groove.
Oh, heaven forbid. Maybe I am right for that.
Well, anyway, I think that at least gets everybody in the ballpark, right?
That put me in a cranky mood. The idea that someone else is in control makes me really upset. It's true. I'm just speaking for the masses here. Let's move on.
I can't wait to get, I know we're going to get some response from this. We opened up a can of worms on this one. But anyway, it does dovetail perfectly into our topic, though. It really does, because what we're going to talk about today is the drummer as the music director. And in so many ways, it makes perfect sense because, let's just face it,
we're the conductor.
Ta-da! Well, that worked out perfectly, man.
I love it.
You like that?
I don't have to wave my arms to keep them string players in line. I'll just play louder.
There you go. What do you mean, dynamics? I'm playing as loud as I can.
Hey, Joe, you just stole your line.
Yeah. So, John, we've kind of talked a little bit about this. We've kind of hinted at it from time to time. I know that in our show, when we were talking about like different streams of revenue, one of the things we talked about is that inside of certain gigs, opportunities come up to where you can be offered this position.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've also had one of our guests in particular, John Roberts, talked about taking on that gig from time to time also.
Yep.
So we're going to talk about it today. And it's a super multifaceted kind of position. And it doesn't mean the same thing from situation to situation. In other words, there are parts of one sort of music directorship that may not be a part of another.
Right.
You know?
Even in the same genre.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I guess we'll kind of start this thing off by discussing what it can be. In other words, the music directorship can be some and or all of certain traits. And some of those could be, one, staffing the band,
mm-hmm.
rehearsing the band, sometimes making charts. Sometimes you have to even go beyond making charts and just straight up do arrangements of songs. Especially if you're doing things where you're having to do medleys. Sometimes you have to string a bunch of different songs together. You got to create some kind of a cogent arrangement, you know? A
map of sorts.
Yep.
Yep.
You got to be able to create rehearsal itineraries. In other words, be able to communicate to the band the things that you have to rehearse and be prepared for when a rehearsal's coming up. Then when you get to the rehearsal, ideally you'd want to run the rehearsals. One thing I think is really important is being able to effectively distribute media, okay? Mm-hmm. And essentially by that we're talking about you got to get to this band, you got to get MP3s, whether it be original MP3s or if you've recorded rehearsals or recorded sound checks or recorded gigs, being able to get those MP3s to band members. Also, any charts that you make, make sure you get those things into a widely accepted format, like a PDF format. Be able to get those to people through email and or Dropboxes. In other words, being able to do that, which also means you gotta be a file management and organizational demon.
Right.
Man, that is so important, man. When you've got all these different files from different groups that you might be working with, specific arrangements, specific, of course, MP3s regarding board tapes and that kind of stuff, really keep that stuff organized. So the organizational aspect of like archiving the media is really important. In this day and age, you got to be real comfortable with software. So you got to be good with creating sequences. You got to be good with, again, managing files inside of those sequences. I think you got to be good with notational software as well, because if you're creating charts, you absolutely positively need to be able to create these charts and modify them inside of software. Because there's nothing worse than if you were handwriting out all these charts, you get into rehearsal, singer can't sing in that key, you got to end up transposing everything down. And if you do that by hand, that's a whole nother set of charts, whereas opposed to if you got a software like notation program on your computer, all you have to do is click a couple buttons and you're already in another key.
Whoop.
Yep. That's also really handy when you're dealing with horns as well, when you have to transpose into different keys like B flat and E flat for different horn players. It's just it's a click away, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then when you get to the gig, you need to be able to organize your sound check and then obviously run sound checks. And then there's always the things that we just talked about. Conducting. You got to conduct that band. And what I mean by that is you got to make sure you count, be able to effectively count in the band. And then you got to be able to get the band out of songs as well.
Get out.
Get out. Cut them off the end. Or as, didn't Joe
no
say?
No double time Allman Brothers inspired jamming at the end. We're getting out.
Short and sweet, man.
Amen.
Cut that band off. And so, John, what we'll do is we will kind of elaborate on some of these topics and talk about what we mean by some of these things. And there's definitely some intricacies inside of each of these that we can talk about from our vast experience in having to deal with these sort of situations. Because I'm currently the music director, full-time director of one band. And then there's another band that I guess you might say that I'm kind of the assistant band leader. You know, and both of them deal with sort of the, or assistant music director, I should say, and both of them sort of deal with the same style of duties, but some have different things inside of each one that we can talk about. So the first one, John, let's talk about being the band personnel director or staffing the band. Sometimes part of your duties would be when you're either creating a band or when you're in an existing band and you either lose personnel or need personnel, you put those feelers out and you try to find some people. And one of the more important things that you can have in your arsenal is a good relationship with other musicians in the community that you can draw from this pool of players in an effective manner that kind of fits the overall concept and musical direction of the band.
Right. I've been in a situation where an artist asked me to find musicians, and there were some parameters.
Yeah.
A look was part of it. A vibe was part of it. Even down to like gear, what kind of gear they used. And one thing under those circumstances you need to be prepared for is that's going to leave some people out. Even if they're qualified on a lot of levels, it could be something as much as like they don't have hair, but the artists want someone with hair, or they play a Paul Reed Smith, but the artist prefers a Fender Telecaster. You know, some of these things that in the big picture are kind of a drag, but it's just kind of the nature of the beast in especially popular music. That you have to be mindful of. And my experience was, you know, I caught a lot of grief from some people over that, but that's sort of, it still is part of your responsibility to remain true to the wishes and parameters you're given. So that's one thing that you might want to be aware of. And if not told, ask.
Exactly. And one of the biggies also would be just overall personality and just amenability to get along with other folks in a group. Man, we mentioned it in a previous show, but one of the groups that I'm working in right now went through that in spades, man, and it was not a lot of fun. And then basically this person lost their job from just not being able to keep their spurs from jingling and a jangling.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and look, you know, another thing we've touched on, if you are in charge of that hire, you know, it reflects on you. So you want to be pretty certain the personality side and the worth ethic side coincide with whatever, you know, image and gear and all that we talked about. You know, that's something that do your due diligence on, because it reflects on you, man.
It is
poor leadership if you're not looking into all of these things.
That's correct. And ultimately what it ends up causing is wasted time.
Mm-hmm.
And wasted time just directly translates into wasted money.
No doubt.
And so, you know, with our business, with what we do, the majority of the time, most bands run on a fairly tight budget. And if you end up messing up, it's not a good thing.
No.
So, you look at all these different factors and weigh them accordingly.
You know, one thing that I think we should touch base on before moving forward is, as an MD, your people skills have to really, really be pretty together.
Mm-hmm.
You're dealing with creatives, you're dealing with insecurity, you're dealing with ego, you're dealing with expectations that sometimes can be unrealistic. And, you know, being really communicative, being really honest, being really knowledgeable about whatever is going to be presented, be it transportation, you know, the reality of load in, load out, the reality of sound check time and availability and all of these things, man. The more you communicate, the better. And doing it effectively, and even more importantly, responding effectively.
Correct.
Those are things that if you don't really feel like you have that in your personality, an MD position is going to be pretty rough.
And I'll tell you, to piggyback onto that, you exactly said the method of response, not reacting, mm-hmm. but responding. That is incredibly important. And then the other thing is this, the art of communicating musical direction. Oh my gosh, if you deliver that too heavy-handed to certain people, it is a disaster. Because in particular, when you're dealing with, let's say, singers, if you're rehearsing some material and the key's just too high, it's, to some singers, it is a badge of honor, you know, to be able to blast out those super high keys. And you have to, you know, you have to very gingerly go, you know what? Seems a little uncomfortable for you up there. You might have trouble, you know, making that transition into head voice, just having problems getting, you know, to that higher part of the bridge. Why don't we see if we can bring this thing down a step? You know, make it comfortable for you.
And, yeah. I mean, on any given night, if they have any problems, that could factor into that too. Like,
right,
feeling great that day in rehearsal, but what if you've had a cold for 3 days? And
sure.
So there's some reality that some people don't want to accept.
Yeah, and I mean, it extends all the way down, of course, to the instrumentalists as well, from the standpoint of just like, you know, you have to be, again, sometimes careful. You're talking to certain, you know, keyboard players, guitar players, and just go, you know, that rhythm that you're playing is not exactly, you know, meshing with what, you know, bass and drums are doing. You're a little on top. You're rushing this a little bit. You got to make sure you lay back a little bit more in the pocket on this thing. It'll feel a lot better. You know, so being able to communicate that sort of thing effectively, but yet not too heavy-handedly, is, boy, that's, you said a mouthful. That's good stuff.
Well, that also kind of brings to the point, it's the most effective MD is going to be well-versed in the knowledge of not only other instruments, but, you know, things like, you know, the intricacies of an arrangement, mm-hmm, the theory behind said arrangement, all of these things, you know, like if you're talking about harmonization, you know, that I'm not terribly qualified in that sense. And so that might be something that could be a point of conflict at some point in how I communicate it, or if I can't effectively spell out what it is I'm looking for. So those are things that could be thrown your way and could be problematic.
Well, that's one of the topics that we wanted to cover, that especially I want to perk the ears up of our drumming friends who did go to school, and especially who did work on things like orchestration and instrumentation, arranging, that sort of thing. Because if you're going to get to the point to where you're working with a band where you have to play with other instruments that are not what we would call concert pitch instruments, which would be like tenor sax, soprano sax, any of the saxophone instruments, and some other brass instruments as well, it's good to know these different these good transpositions to make sure that you, when you orchestrate these things, that you are, of course, putting them in the right key, and then also making sure that you know the range of these instruments as well. Because again, it's one of those things that if you've got something in a stratospheric range, there are some instruments that just can't even play to that. And same thing, you can't write things too low because you can't get them outside of their range of playing then. So being able to have, as a drummer, a good working knowledge of orchestration, instrumentation, and music theory, it's vital. And part of that music theory thing is ear training as well, to be able to hear different things such as tuning and of course, being able to hear other things regarding arrangements and pitch, harmony, like you were talking about. All that stuff is very, very important whenever you're doing that. Okay. Also, when you're writing charts, you just need to make sure that you are writing things in good, proper notation, that you're not just blasting the rules of tonal harmony and music theory, that you write things that are easy to read. There's nothing more frustrating than being handed charts, especially of a song that's a simple song, like a lead sheet style thing where you're just playing a standard type song, and everything's in nice 8-bar phrases, and then in the first line you've got 2 measures, and in the second line you got 9 measures, and in the third line you got 12 measures, and the fourth line you got 1.
I love those.
You know, being able to accurately write out a chart and write it out to where it's easy to read, it's so important, man. Mm-hmm. And we as drummers sometimes we're guilty of thinking in terms of writing things out that are very dramatically. Like we love writing out things, you know, with short notes and rests when they actually should be notes that are tied over to other notes that are being held out. You know, we're very guilty of that sort of thing. So we need to be able to think in terms of, especially we'd call them sustaining style instruments, or notes that or instruments that have to play longer notes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we have to be careful of that. We have to be careful of like these other kind of notational problems, like what I would call it, writing over the imaginary bar line, which is essentially in a bar 4-4, you never want to obscure count 3. In other words, you never want to put any kind of rhythm that doesn't show you where beat 3 is. You should always, on beat 3, always either have some kind of a rest or have a note on there, whether it's a tied note or a proper note or a rest. The only exception to that is if you're writing like a whole note in there. So it's little things like that, you know, that you need to be aware of. So drummers, yeah, music theory, instrumentation, orchestration, it's your friend.
I always hate like big band arrangements where all the figures are tied and I'm kind of like just tied up myself. Like, because I read okay, but like I don't think like that. And sometimes I think some good arrangers actually might alter the figures over drum parts, you know?
Yeah.
Just to make that more aesthetically pleasing and rhythmically helping us understand it.
Yeah, I got the first time, it was years ago, I got my hand spanked by some horn players by chopping off some notes and stuff that should have been, you know, tied over to other notes because I was writing them too dramistically. So you learn.
That's inexcusable.
Yeah, well. John, we talked about being able to rehearse the band. It's an important thing.
Man, the thicker the whip, the quicker it comes together.
There you go. And the first thing that I do is I really make sure that I communicate with the band well ahead of time through what I like to call a rehearsal itinerary, which is essentially, it's just everything you need to prepare before the rehearsal. And of course, it includes all the particulars such as the date of the rehearsal, the time of the rehearsal, where it's going to be, that sort of thing. But make sure that you can put together a very well-written, very self-explanatory type of a document that you can get to musicians that tells them, look, we're going to work on this, we're going to work on this, we're going to learn this, and give them a list of things, and then be able to include all the media that you need. Also, here's an MP3 for this, here's a chart for that, and prepare, and I'll see you on that date. It's important.
You know, I was thinking about that, rehearsing a song, especially if there's charts involved. And I think in some ways, I think there's this pride thing. Like, man, I can read it down. But I always think at a rehearsal, I love when a leader takes, like, say, hey, man, let's look at this chart. We're going to sit down and look at this chart together.
Yeah.
Maybe even be playing the tune. And we're make sure everybody's looking, and we're talking about talk about a bridge. Hey, it's a little tricky here. Let's make sure we focus on this. Or once we're sitting down and playing it, like, does anybody, why don't we do this bridge before we read this tune down? And all that. And I think sometimes we just sort of, we could be more effective as leaders and as musicians if we set aside that. You know, in a rehearsal, we don't have to read it down necessarily. Let's do everything we can to effectively read it down, i.e. communicate, you know, make sure everybody's on. Or sometimes you'll get things like, you know, like in church world, you get a lot of like lyric sheets with just some chords over them. Talk through it, you know, like a lead worship leader, like, you know, it's not marked, but I want to do that chorus twice here. I want to break the first one down. Like, just talk through it before we do it, instead of playing a minute and a half, faltering on that what someone wants as a double chorus, but didn't communicate it, and then having to start all over. It's like, just, we could all be better about communicating prior to just blowing through stuff. I think that's something that often is overlooked.
Well, it also recalls that thing that we've talked about over and over and over again, that the best rehearsers and the best practicers are the people that practice the stuff that needs to be practiced the most, right? Mm-hmm. It's exactly like you said. Sometimes if you're running a real standard stock kind of chart, but there's 8 bars of a bridge that absolutely needs, you know, attention because maybe there's some odd times, or there's just a weird groove, or there's something that happens in there. Go over that 5 times before you actually even run the rest of the song.
Amen.
You know, that's part of your organizational aspect and also part of your communicative.
I think it comes down to, sometimes it's ego, sometimes it's laziness, but I mean, You talk about wasting time.
Yeah.
You get halfway through a tune and then just crap all over a bridge and you got to start over or go back and redo it. It's like, I hate that. God, I hate that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, a couple of other little quick silver bullets that I like to use is that when I'm running a rehearsal, and let's say there's multiple singers, if time allows and nobody has to get out early, nobody's requested to leave early, I always like to split the songs up to where no one singer sings a whole bunch of things consecutively. Yeah. So it's give the old voice a rest, you know. Split those songs up, let everybody rest a little bit between songs. Helps out a little bit. And the other thing is this. On the topic of staying organized, when you're finishing up a rehearsal, a lot of times if there's new material that has to be learned, while everyone is still there, I like to A, communicate it to them to say, hey, look, just so there's no surprises, we got some brand new stuff that's coming up. And then also, it's really important to be able to try to assign specific new material to singers right then and there at that time. In other words, there could be somebody that feels really strongly like, hey, I already know this song. You know, let me go ahead and get a crack at it. Or there might be somebody that might go, look, I already know right now that song's out of my range. And, you know, if we're going to change keys too much, it changes the whole vibe and makes it basically a different song if you have to change the key too drastically. So let's let this person try it instead. So trying to be able to kind of stay organized and assign some material at a rehearsal for a following rehearsal will a lot of times save a lot of time and confusion in between rehearsals when you're trying to make either multiple phone calls or multiple emails and people are not getting back to you, and it just wastes time. So being able to organize a following rehearsal at an existing rehearsal, do it.
No doubt.
Next thing, we talked a little bit about, we'll call it file management. I like to consider myself the band media archivist. And being able to keep this stuff separate and organized, man, it saves hours upon hours, which turns into days, which turns into weeks. So
even for your sub.
There you go.
And I
there
speak
you go.
From experience.
Yes.
Phil sent me a number of charts he had already archived and put into PDF. And boy, you talk about making life easy, man. I didn't have to sit there and count bars or guests. And it was just, especially on some of those medleys you do.
Yeah.
That was gold, baby.
Hey, much appreciated. But essentially, the two-cent tour that I will give everyone into my file management system is essentially this. Folders are your friends. Create a master folder for each group. And then inside of that for each group, I make sure I have folders for charts. I have folders for MP3s. I have folders for videos, if that is part of it as well. I have folders for sequences. And then just be very, very diligent in your style of naming these different files inside the folders. Like, let me give you a perfect example of this. If you're housing a whole bunch of MP3s, try to keep the naming system the same. In other words, like start out with the title of the song and then put the artist afterwards. If you start having like a whole bunch of numbers up front, like number 9 and such, you just end up having a disaster when it comes to trying to find these things. Because sometimes even the search function in your folders get a little wonky when there are too many different methods of naming files. So keep a consistent way that you name files. Try to keep a consistent style of files. Like, I again just throw out the whole thing of using PDFs for charts. It's the industry standard. Doesn't matter, man, if somebody's using Windows, Mac, Android, tablets, phones, everybody will be able to open a PDF.
Yep.
You know? So keep those things standardized in file naming and then use folders, name those folders, and then boy, the next big thing. John, back it up. Back Ooh. It up.
Back it up.
Back it baby. Up.
Yep. We had a story from Little John that he had a problem with that something not being backed up.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Learned a lesson. I bet you he's never not backed something up again.
Now, I might be a little on the far side of this thing, but I mean, it's just, I'm one of these guys, man, I have it on my host computer. I have it on two separate hard drives, and I have it on a file storage service as well. Now, it's a pain in the butt, man, because you got to go through and you got to back it up three different ways, but chances are you're not going to lose all those.
True.
Unless we have zombie apocalypse and we lose all power. Then you're in a mess.
Then you're just trying to survive. You don't care about some chart for a wedding.
I'm going to start up a band called The Zombies.
No.
No, that didn't work, did it?
Already done.
Yeah. Well, moving on. Talking about files, sometimes you have to be creative and you have to know some software because I have to make sequences from time to time, mm-hmm. John. So I think most people nowadays, and especially the younger drummers, are not afraid of this, not afraid of technology. But here's what I would tell you. I would say that for the drummer music director, get comfortable with a few different versions of software. Because chances are, if you're running the stuff yourself, you'll have your own choice of software. But there's the occasional time where, like one of the music director ships that I have to run on a software that is not necessarily native to me, one that I'm not as familiar with. So I had to learn a little bit about some of these.
Right.
But like, for example, it's good to know a few different softwares like Pro Tools, Cubase, Ableton. It's also good to know, I'll tell you one that I really like that I've been using some recently. Have you ever messed around with this little software that's on Apple called Playback?
Bill.
John, did I tell you, did I mention that I like your Braves cap today?
Did I mention embarrassing me on this podcast is not acceptable?
He knows more than he's letting on, guys. For example, I know you have an 8-track player in your car, so you've got some technology experience, man, going.
Nothing sounds better.
That warmth of magnetic tape.
My Beach Boys greatest hits. My cousin had an amazing old GTO with an 8-track player on it, and he played the Beach Boys all the time, and I'd look back and I'm like, that was all right. I didn't have a care in the world, and I was out of debt.
Two things that I'll say about the Beach Boys. One, Dennis Wilson's greatest performance ever was in Tulane Blacktop with the movie with James Taylor. Love it. If you haven't seen it, that's my pick of the week. And I can't remember what the second one was. How's that?
He had an exceptionally awesome set of Camco drums.
They're probably sitting at Pro Drum Shop out in Hollywood.
And I bet they sound like $1 million. And probably he couldn't play them to save his life.
Oh, I know what I was going to say, the other thing. Do you know what GTO stands for?
Awesome.
Get the tools out.
No way.
Well, it was also, GTO was also, again, perfect segue, man. You couldn't have planned this any better. That was the car that Warren Oates drove in the aforementioned Tulane Blacktop movie.
Because he was cool.
It's a 1970 Tony Williams yellow.
No.
GTO it was.
No.
Not kidding you, man. I'm going to show you.
65 or 66.
You look at Warren Oates driving that 1970 GTO.
He picked the wrong car.
How did we go?
As his car director, I would suggest he make a change. Tactfully, of course.
We went from Ableton Live to 1965 GTOs.
Yeah, baby.
We can freaking turn on a dime.
Blame it on the pollen.
But anyway, to button up that thing about the software, it's good to be able to know these different pieces of software, of course, not only from the creation aspect, but also from the running aspect, and then also when you're either in rehearsals or on gigs, and you're working with these different softwares, it's you need to know enough about them to be able to make edits on the fly.
Good.
Thanks, John. Appreciate that.
I can't do that with my two realistic cassette recorders that I bounce back and forth. So you have an advantage over me in the run for musical director of any given gig.
You know what I like about that, though, John? I like it. It's very old school when you rock those hubs back and forth and get that kind of scratching sound thing going.
Oh, yeah, man.
That is hot. Next thing. So another thing that's really important is when you're getting towards gig day, you need to be able to create a good cohesive set list for the gig. I mean, that, man, let me tell you, that is make or break, baby. And then on top of that, another thing that comes with experience is when you are on the gig, being able to have enough, we'll call it gig sense, to be able to read your audience and, if necessary, make set list changes on the fly.
Mm-hmm. Always good.
It's always good. Now, and again, that's one of those things that it pretty much comes from just pure old gig experience, being able to learn how to read a room, read an audience, and be able to make those changes when you need it.
Yeah.
So set list creation is, you know, one of those things. It's highly underrated. In other words, being able to make a good, because it's you know what it's like, John? It's like the old school concept of putting together an album, right? In other words, yep, being able to, from the first track to the last track, create a good flow.
Yeah.
So there.
I think as far as set list too, it's important to know the age and eyesight of each individual band member and pick the appropriate size font. That's my advice when it comes to set lists.
Man, let me tell you, I am not going to disagree with that whatsoever, because I think, seriously, most of the set lists that I do and receive are in like 18 to maybe even 20 point, probably 18. I'd say 18 point font.
We're lucky to get that, and we are old.
I would tell you this, do your set list as landscape style printing, right? In other words, make it lengthwise.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can get more on a page, you know, really, really minimize your margins and get a lot of stuff on a page. Three columns max, and make sure that when you're, again, putting those things in line, use the largest font you can to fill up the page.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
I think there's also like a regular working band. You can have abbreviations of things, you know, like some songs you could just have one word and everyone's going to know what it is.
Yeah.
You know, so that's something like, you know, you're typing out some long-winded title.
Yeah.
You know, I've got you under my skin. Just put skin. What is the song you're doing that, you know, you're not probably not doing skin deep as well. So,
yeah,
you might, but, you know, I mean, if that's the only song you do with skin in the title, don't type it out, brah.
I like the cheeky abbreviations, man. Saves ink, we'll say that.
I agree.
Yeah.
It is good.
When you're on the gig, chances are also you're going to have to do a sound check. And the crafty music director will make a sound check a multitude of different things if you run it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be a glorified rehearsal. We saw Lettuce do that.
Yep.
So basically, it was a combination rehearsal, sound check, and actually a little bit of writing and arranging simultaneously. We saw them do that. So that's very, very wise use of time. Basically, what I like to do when I'm running a sound check is, again, a little bit ahead of time. I like to take that set list, find the hot spots that are on there, communicate it to everyone, and go, look, guys, we got a few hot spots on this gig. We need to make sure we run over these. Give each singer, each vocalist, a chance to sing at least one, if not a couple things, so one, they can get a good mix in their in-ear monitors or their wedges. Most of the groups that I play in now all use, everyone uses in-ears. Mm-hmm. Give everybody a chance to mix their ears for lead vocal and also to give themselves a decent shot to balance the other vocalists as well when they're doing background vocals as well. So I think that's important to do. You want to make sure you give everybody else in the band a little bit of time after you've run the stuff that you know that needs to be run. If anybody's a little uncomfortable with something, hey, I want to make sure I go over this part. I'm a little unsure about when this bridge happens or when this solo happens. I want to go through that.
Or mix-wise.
Mix-wise, yeah.
Now, nothing annoys me more than like, say you're on a gig where you got to build mixes.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of our gigs, we have a digital board with saved mixes, and but you're PA provided, you're going in cold, maybe it's a fly date and you got backline. And a singer rings out their monitor and they go, okay, let's go. And you haven't even started.
Right.
You know, like be a good manager of that if you're running a sound check. Like have a game plan. Maybe you start with the drummer, get his mix, you know, his drum mix there, and then build on that. Or, you know, that kind of thing, as opposed to just allowing people to be completely self-centered in a sound check. A sound check can go significantly quicker and be more effective if you have a game plan and everyone understands that other people need attention to their mix as well.
And the other thing that also needs attention is if you're in a group that uses a fair amount of different electronics, clicks, sequences, loops, you need to make sure that you run something using each of those pieces of gear to make sure that it's working functionally, mm-hmm. and also, again, that everyone can get that mix correct in their ears for that. So that's another thing. You need to budget a little bit of time to make sure you get all the electronics going as well. Just a couple of other quick things about gig day is that you are the de facto conductor on the gig. So as the music director / conductor, you need to make sure that you are confident and firm and in time with your count ins. So important, man. If the count in, you know, is not strong, the rest of the song is going to be started off on a shaky foot. So you got to make sure you get a nice strong count in. And then also you got to make sure that, especially if you're ending songs that are somewhat open-ended on vamps, that you give good, clean, concise, consistent cues to get out when everybody's supposed to get out. And then make sure that you cut if you're going to do the proverbial shut the door, put a button on it, give a good clean cue on how you're going to cut the band off at the end as well. So now, John, one of the things that we also talked about, you and I were discussing this yesterday on the phone, is that there are a few different, we'll call them special gig circumstances that we do from time to time. You and I have both done different award shows, TV shows, different things like that where you have to do a lot of quick visual cues. Sometimes you have to do also cues when you have like a stage manager in your ears, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And so let's talk a little bit about that as well. It'll be a fairly quick topic, but basically something that you need to be really comfortable with as a music director and a drummer is if you are doing some kind of a show that is based on visual cues, and let me go ahead and throw this caveat in there also. I have done a few different TV shows where I've had to take visual cues off of a monitor, and it is different
definitely
than just watching, you know, the actual stage. So watching the stage and watching a TV is a little bit different. It's hard to explain, but it's kind of one of those things that you just kind of have to get comfortable with when you're doing this. But one of the things in particular you have to be very comfortable with is when you take a visual cue, you have to, one, make sure you have a solid tempo ready to give to the band, and it has to be quick, quick, quick. And then likewise, you have to be super quick getting out of a song as well, whether it be, like, for example, if you're giving an award and someone's walking up on stage and they're getting ready to give a speech, or it could be even something that you're coming into or out of a commercial break. And one of the little tricks that I like to use when I'm doing something like that is, for example, we're waiting on a visual cue or even an audio cue to bring someone up on stage. All right, the band is watching me. I will give them silent tempo. I'll give them a tempo. And one of the things I'll do is, John, you can describe if you want to. I'm like taking a stick and basically being like an old school, like a Franz metronome.
Mm-hmm.
I can do that. And then the other thing sometimes that I'll do, I learned this from a conductor, a pops conductor one time. He would do this. He would sometimes even turn to the audience and be speaking, but he would put his hand behind his back and give everybody a tempo like that.
What Pretty good.
Yeah.
Snap putting his fingers together.
Yeah, doing like a little pinching motion. Yeah. And so sometimes I'll do that as well, especially if I'm on stage, you know, like at the side of the stage and people can see, I will just do that little pinching motion sometimes off to the side to where the band can see that. And then if everybody's good with that tempo, really at that time, you can pretty much give a good in time downbeat and everybody will get in.
Yeah.
So that's sort of giving silent tempo into a count in. That's a nice little trick of the trade that I like to use.
I got one. Well, first and foremost, a lot of times in that walk ups and that kind of thing, like I've done a number of either award shows or, you know, like a corporate setting, like a sales meeting or something like that, and they're doing kind of a big, you know, to do with people walking up, you know, receive awards, things, that kind of thing, or come up to speak. Mm-hmm. Two things. One, a good producer can make life really easy. Like the best producers I've worked with, they'll be in your ear and they'll be so consistent. They'll be like, standby.
Yes.
5 seconds, go. Like no matter what, no matter what the cue, no matter what we're doing, no matter what the, you know, circumstances, a quick walk up, a full tune, a sound effect, they're consistent in their, you know, standby.
Yep.
All that. And that makes, because you just, you get it in your brain if you're then relaying the start to others. But the system we came up with, we were doing a lot of these for a while. It was kind of cool. Like the trend in the corporate world was like a Letterman style band on stage. And as people are coming in, you're playing and they interact with people on stage sometimes, do some funny stuff, do walk ups, all that. We came up with this thing where we had a bunch of just pop tunes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knew the riff they were going to be playing or the progression they're going to be playing. It was spelled out. But we do that where I, you know, good musicians have the general tempo in your head. I hit 4, we go. And then coming out of it, you know, everybody, there's some people that think they can do that Letterman stop on a dime Paul Schaefer thing. Well,
on the E of two,
if you do that for 30 years, you might have a pretty good chance at pulling that off consistently. But what we didn't, and normally I'm the one doing the cues as opposed to an inexperienced person standing there going, you know, stop. We would do it where I would hit 4, we'd go, and getting out of it, the last bar of wherever I feel or wherever we need to get out, I just do quarter notes on the snare in the groove. 1, 2, 3, 4, downbeat.
Right.
Out. And it was clean. And, you know, people are oftentimes are like, well, we want to get out when we want to get out. Those two extra beats, if someone's standing on stage, it's not like they're waiting 6 bars while you finish a song before they speak. It's 2 beats. It's so minute.
Normally translates into less than a second.
Yeah. And it's sort of, it's along the same lines of when you, you know, you space between tunes. Sometimes you think it's just forever between songs. Well, it's really not. You know, you'd be surprised how, like in worship settings, a lot of times they're freaking out about time between tunes. Well, sometimes it's appropriate to let something kind of breathe out and then start. So just being kind of aware of that stuff. But there's a couple ideas of, you know, being completely in touch with the producer, whoever's calling, you know, their tendencies and all that, not unlike a conductor,
mm-hmm.
but also having a really solid and kind of bulletproof game plan for getting in and out.
Right. And, you know, along that line, it made me think of another gig that I've had before where there has been the occasional time where I've been given a microphone to actually give verbal cues
mm-hmm.
to people as well. Like we're going to the next section or we're getting out. 1, 2, 3, Yep. So being able to do that as well, that doesn't happen that often.
It's tough for a drummer too because the volume with a mic, so it doesn't happen often.
Yeah.
You could have a guitar player or a bass player doing that and it'd be a whole different story versus a live mic over the drum kit.
A lot of ambient sound. That
gets difficult. People complain, like, I can't hear anything. And so having ideas like you and I presented, you know, that don't require a verbal cue is a good idea to sort of be well-versed in.
Right. Well, John, we could probably go on for another 3 hours, which I'm fine with, but you've already told me you're going to walk out.
Yeah, I'm not. It's an interesting and oftentimes, more often than you'd imagine, this kind of situation can come up if you're in a working band, like a corporate type band. It comes up. We did a lot of them for a while, but I don't want to go on for 2 hours about that.
Well,
it still comes down to the fact that conducting, especially music, you know, that it goes against everything I know, following a conductor. So it's sort of like the topic is a little smarmy for me to begin with.
Well, understood. The entire topic, though, of music directorship, I think it makes a lot of sense for drummers simply from the standpoint of exactly what you said. A lot of times we don't like to follow anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
We are the proverbial alpha dog in the situation. Yeah. So sometimes having that moniker on top of us, I love it, man. I like doing that. I really enjoy doing it. I feel like I can bring a unique thing to a gig by being the music director. So I like doing it. And hopefully some of these little different tips and ideas that we gave everybody today can help everybody, if not have some confidence, you know, in trying to do this gig. It could even spur someone to like, hey, I've got to learn how to do this software better. I need to learn a little bit more about theory, instrumentation, orchestration,
mm-hmm.
proper notation, nomenclature, that sort of thing.
I still want to just reiterate and stress that above all of that, your people skills are going to be really the biggest factor in whether you're successful or not at being a musical director. And if you don't have good people skills, you might want to be honest with yourself and say, it's kind of like, you know, you have a bad boss who just doesn't deal well with an authoritative position. Don't be that guy. That's a drag, especially when it comes to most settings we're in, man. It's about having fun and creating a good time for other people, you know, like entertaining people. Like to have a bunch of miserable people on stage is not cool.
Well, and to your point, every topic that we talked about today, it all boils down to you have to communicate that information to people, whether it's conducting, running a rehearsal, running a sound check, counting people in, getting people out of songs. It's all about the communication aspect, writing effective emails to tell people what's going on in rehearsals and in sound checks.
Yeah. And that people skills thing also, like, you know, sometimes you're put in a position like a kind of a good cop, bad cop sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're the MD for an artist and they don't want to communicate anything negative to a musician. You might have to do that. Now, you know, you don't have to do it heavy handed, but hey, you know, and sometimes you have to present it that way. Like, look, man, I kind of feel like in this solo, you know, we need to stick closer to the vibe of the record. Well, that might be the artist saying that to you.
Yeah.
Then you need to kind of communicate. But, you know, that there's a lot of scenarios that an MD's going to be put in a position that you could kind of make or break it. So just be on your game and have the team digging you.
Let's leave these folks with our segment of the week.
All right. I like these.
Yeah, this week, folks, it's been a little while since we've done a great drum track. And so that is indeed what we're going to do today. John, you want to go first?
Or
you want me to do it? Do it, man.
My track is from my hero, Jeffrey Porcaro.
Had a birthday.
He did, very recently. A bittersweet day for all of us that know and love him and his contributions. The song that that came to mind is a song called Calling Elvis. It's a Dire Straits tune off a record called On Every Street, the opening track, and it's this fabulous and silky smooth tom groove that he plays, and it showcases more than likely that great Gretsch sound. I'm almost positive that it is, hearkening back to our show and our love of that wonderful drum company. But it's just, man, it's just this cool, creative, and just nice loping, constant tom, jungly tom groove that he does. And it's just executed perfectly. And then, of course, Knopfler and all his brilliance, you know, lays right on top of it. And it's a pretty magic moment. That record is such an underrated record, too. Some really great songs. The drum chair is shared by Jeff and Manu Katché, which is really awesome.
It's really ironic, too.
Yeah, it is. Some people don't know that Vince Gill is all over that record. He plays a lot of guitar and a lot of solos, does some harmony, I think. And at one point, Knopfler asked him to join Dire Straits, and Vince was sort of like, that'd be a lot of fun, but my career's going pretty good.
Was part of that record cut in Nashville?
You know, that's a good question. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
I kind of think it was L.A., but it wouldn't surprise me if they did some in Nashville. Incredible record, incredible writing, needless to say, amazing drumming. But Calling Elvis, it's a fun tune, and I really recommend you check it out.
Well, my little quip about irony has to do with the other drummer that you mentioned that's on that record, who is actually my drum track pick of the week, and
yes. That
is the French Dynamo, Manu Katché.
Fashion forward. he's a smooth cat on a lot of levels.
That he is. He's the purveyor of the Ludwig Black Beauty with a marching die-cast hoop on the top.
Mm-hmm.
One of those things. So my track that Manu Katché plays on is probably also roughly from the same era, roughly the same time. It's Robbie Robertson's debut album from 1987, and the track is called Somewhere Down the Crazy River. And this is one of those, I'm going to say it's a typical, it's got Manu Katché groove written all over it. It's one of these very syncopated, kind of angular sounding grooves that uses a combination of like...
splash cymbals?
Well, it's got little roughs, little drags on the cymbals and the hi-hats, little five-stroke rolls with these syncopated grooves that, you know, he plays this track, I'm pretty sure, with the snares off all the way through it, and he's playing this little groove where the snare hits on like the of one, toms that come in on like the of three, and then sometimes on four. I think it's a four-bar pattern is what is primarily played on those verses. And then when it gets to the choruses, it goes into more of a straight two and four style groove. But it fits perfectly on this song because the verses have this kind of an ethereal, almost a spoken word sort of vibe that Robbie Robertson is singing or speaking. And then Manu's playing that kind of off-kilter syncopated groove. And it just feels so good, sounds so good all the way through. And it really is one of the ultimate Manu Katché signature groove stamps that he put all over that song.
Love it. That guy is a distinct voice for sure, man. I'm confident almost across the board when I hear him, I know who it is.
Yeah,
he's just got that thing.
Is it somewhat surprising that he is not more well known and played on even more stuff than he did? Because I mean, really, we only think about him in about three or four different ways. We think about him with Peter Gabriel, think about him with Sting, think about him with Robbie Robertson.
It is perplexing that he's not. You know, because it's not like he's bringing something that's just, you know, distracting musically. And everything he does is incredibly musical. It some of it becomes hooks almost, you know. Mm-hmm. It is pretty fast. I don't know, you know. Is he hard to work with? Is he not interested in doing a lot of projects? It's hard to say, man.
Yeah, and I think the other couple things that might point us in the direction of why he doesn't is he lives in France and has always lived over there, to my understanding. I don't think he's ever had any interest in relocating.
That would be a big plus.
And also, if you've ever heard him speak before, met him before, he is not the easiest guy to understand. There's a language barrier.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those two things probably play a fairly big role in that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What a great player, man.
Love it.
I think that that's going to make me go revisit a bunch of his stuff is what I'm trying to say. I'm always deeply into his whole vibe and looking forward to making a little Spotify list maybe.
Man, that little groove that he plays on that Sting record, Nothing Like the Sun, it's called Be Still My Beating Heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a lot of Porcaro roots in it, that one-handed 16th note hi-hat thing.
Yep.
Oh, man, does it sound and feel good, man,
no
when he
doubt.
Plays that.
Yeah. He is a bad dude.
So we got Porcaro and Manu.
I don't think we're going to get a lot of complaints about that.
Yeah, those two guys... they know where it's at.
No doubt.
John, you got anything else you want to say to these folks before I button this thing up?
I'm getting ready to sell a lot of stuff if anybody's interested. So there. I can advertise myself. I'm not going to push anyone else's agenda, but...
I was going to say, man, the rates for the advertising on this show just gone up, man, all of a sudden.
I got a garage full of stuff. Everybody pay attention.
And by stuff, he means like 1965 GTOs.
I wish.
Yeah.
Although, if I get that stupid garage cleaned out, I'd have less of an excuse to not buy one.
Oh, that's a good point,
Woo.
Man. All right, folks, don't forget, Tuesday, April 18th, the big drawing's going to happen. So all you have to do to get in line, run over to iTunes, go to the Drummer's Weekly Groovecast page on iTunes. Leave us a short written review. Remember, it has to be a written review where we can see your iTunes ID, your handle, your name on there, and then you will be entered to win. We'll give you guys a heads up on the exact time of the day on April 18th when we're going to do the drawing, but we'll do a little Facebook Live thing. It'll be fun. Everyone will love it. And as always, reach out to us. You can email us, drummersweeklygroovecast@gmail.com. You can also reach us on Facebook at facebook.com/drummersweeklygroovecast. And then you can interact with us at Twitter, twitter.com/dwgroovecast. Subscribe to us.
Come on.
New shows every Monday. We bring the heat.
Yeah.
You would think, John, that I had said that little spiel enough before about how to get in touch with us that I wouldn't fumble all over the words like an ass.
You're human. Hey, I know we've gotten a lot of new eyes and ears on the show, especially with that Gretsch show we did. And welcome. Please know that we appreciate you listening and coming back if you have and going back and listening to previous shows, but love hearing from new people. contact us, got ideas, any questions, feel free to throw them our way.
Absolutely. We've always said that from the get-go, our listening audience is going to be a big part of the show. And you have been. We answer questions personally, and we answer them on the show. And as our longtime listeners know, we've done a handful of shows that were actually directly sent in ideas from our listeners.
Come on with them.
So bring it on. Until next week, we'll see you then.
Goodbye.
Bye.